morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's 2020 second quarter results conference call and webcast. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique et à la webdiffusion des résultats du deuxième trimestre 2020 d'Innergex Énergies Renouvelables. At this time, all participants on the phone and internet are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question and answer session for analysts and industrial investors. Instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded. I will now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Communications Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. A presentation supporting today's discussion is available as we speak on the homepage of our website at www.innergex.com. This call contains forward-looking statements within the meaning of applicable securities laws. Although the corporation believes that the expectations and assumptions are reasonable under the current circumstances, listeners are cautioned not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements, as no assurance can be given that it will prove to be correct. Forward-looking information contained herein is made as of the date of this call, and the corporation does not undertake any obligation to update or revise any forward-looking information, whether as a result of events or circumstances occurring after the date hereof, unless so required by law. During this call, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to International Financial Reporting Standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures section of the MD&A for more information. Our speakers today will be Jean-François Neault, Chief Financial Officer, who will present Q2 results, and Mr. Michel Letellier, President and Chief Executive Officer, who will review our operational highlights and our Q3 priorities. I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Neault.
Thank you, Karine. Hello, everyone. The recent commissioning in the wind and solar segments contributed to increased results this quarter compared to the same period last year, despite the curtailment imposed by BC Hydro in the hydro segment. Production and revenues for the three-month period ended June 30th, 2020, were up 25% and 4% respectively, and adjusted EBITDA was stable at 105 million compared to last year. Production proportionate, revenue proportionate, and adjusted EBITDA proportionate were up by 29%, 21%, 9%, and 10% respectively. Before going further, I'd like to stress that 2019 figures are still reported on a continued operation basis, which exclude HS Orca. On page eight, production for the three-month period ended June 30th, 2020 was 25% higher, due mainly to the contribution of the Foard City Wind Farm and the Phoebe Solar facility, which were commissioned respectively on September 27th and November 19th, 2019. It was also driven by higher production from the Quebec wind facilities and hydro facilities in BC that were not affected by the curtailment imposed by BC Hydro, which impacted five consolidated facilities, thus partially offsetting total increased production. On page nine, revenues were up 4%, the increase is mainly due to the commissioning of the Foard City and Phoebe facilities, higher revenues at the Quebec wind facilities, and to the acquisition of the Salvador Solar Farm in Chile on May 14th, 2020. These items were partly offset by lower revenues from the hydro facilities in BC, primarily due to the BC Hydro curtailment, along with lower average selling price at some facilities, as well as lower revenues at some Quebec hydro facilities and France wind farms. On next page, adjusted EBITDA remained stable compared to the same quarter last year, mainly due to higher revenues and lower operational expenses at the Quebec wind facilities, the commissioning of Phoebe and Ford City, a higher contribution from the Ontario Solar Facility and Salvador acquisition. However, these items were offset almost exclusively by the BC Hydro curtailment. The 10% increase in adjusted EBITDA proportionate compared to the same quarter last year is mainly driven by the PTCs generated by Ford City following its commissioning in September and a higher contribution from Duke, Toba Morros, and the Chilean facilities. It was partly offset by a lower contribution from the Flat Top and Shannon and Jimmy Creek facilities, which in this case was also impacted by the curtailment. Continuing on page 12, the $278 million decrease in long-term debt is mainly due to a net $309 million repayment of the corporate credit facility from the proceeds of Hydro-Québec private placement in Innergex common shares. This item was partly offset by drawing related to the Hillcrest construction and other cash requirements. On the next page, change in total assets stem mainly from the increase in property, plant, and equipment attributable mainly to Hillcrest and Salvador acquisition. Change in total liabilities stems from the decrease in long-term debt. The change in shareholder equity is explained by Hydro-Québec private placement of 34.6 million shares, partly offset by dividend declared on common and preferred shares. As shown on the next slide, the free cash flow available for distribution of $74 million represents a decrease of $41.9 million when comparing the current trailing 12 month to the same period a year ago. The unfavorable free cash flow variance is due mainly to the loss in free cash flow attributable to HSRCA, including the recovery of maintenance capital expenditure, an unfavorable impact from the BC Hydro imposed curtailment, the timing of certain project loan interest payments, which resulted in the corporation having made 5 quarterly payments during the trailing 4 quarters, and a lower generation due to unfavorable weather conditions. These items were partly offset by the free cash flow contribution of recently commissioned projects and lower interest payment on the corporate revolving facilities concurrent with the Hydro-Québec private placement. Combined with these items, a higher dividend from Q1 and Q2 following Hydro-Québec private placement has increased the payout ratio to 150%. Now, that being said, let me bring you to page 15. We have normalized the payout ratio for better appreciation of our run rate capacity. Starting from the reported $74 million free cash flow and the 150%, and when taking into account the $11 million from BC Hydro curtailment, the $13 million due to timing of interest payments, the $5 million decrease in corporate revolving facilities interest payments, and the $13 million in additional dividend payments, the normalized free cash flow and payout ratio would have respectively reached $93 million and 105%. Furthermore, on a forward-looking basis, when considering a full-year contribution of our two recently announced acquisitions and the contribution of the Hillcrest project, the non-recurring curtailment imposed by BC Hydro, the timing of interest payments, the production at 100% of LTA levels, market softening assumption, and the additional dividend, free cash flow would reach $128 million, thus bringing the payout ratio just below 100% in the next 12-month estimate. Moreover, this forecast does not take into consideration Griffin Trail or any other potential acquisition that could be achieved with the remaining unused proceeds of the Hydro-Québec private placement. In conclusion, considering our current outlook and the additional cash-generating capacity to be derived from our growth strategy, which combine acquisition and project development, we are confident to attain a payout ratio of under 100% in the near future. On that note, I will give the floor to Michel for the operational review of the past quarter.
Well, thank you very much, Jean-François. First and foremost, I'd like to thank all our employees for their dedication during this crisis. I'm very, very proud of all the team. We've been very busy. As Jean-François mentioned, we did the acquisition, and we are advancing the development portfolio very well. So I think that in the context of the COVID-19, our team did a fantastic job in the last few months. And as a corporation, without even the COVID-19, I'm very excited on the development side and the acquisition execution. So just to coming back on the COVID-19, as you know, we have been managing our asset on a different aspect, in the sense that we have our health and safety in mind for our employees. We're still working from a distance, from home. For the time being, everything works very well. It's a little bit challenging in the sense that we are welcoming new employees as we grow, and this is a little bit of a challenge, of course, but we are adapting our leadership style to take into consideration this new reality that we all face. Now, for the acquisition side, you all have seen the acquisition of the Salvador, the solar plant in Chile. We're very happy to have been able to complete it, this acquisition. Mind you that, as Jean-François mentioned, we have had a little bit of a delay in the execution of those acquisitions that were announced after the investment of Hydro-Québec. But I think we were a little bit cautious given the crisis, and we took our time to assess the situation. And in this case, we were able also to renegotiate a little bit the acquisition price. So all is always best. And we maintain our prudent approach of deploying our liquidity. That's why also we will be talking also with Mountain Air, the wind farm that we just bought in Idaho. So those two acquisitions are part of our strategy to balance the cash flow. Jean-François has been talking about the payout ratio. We're mindful that we have to bring the payout ratio below 100% and into a better sustainable level. Thanks. One of the strategy that we want to do, and I mentioned it a few times, is to use M&A as a tool to rebalance our cash flow, because we are very successful. I'm proud to report, and then I'll explain a little bit the advancement we've done in the development sector. So I think we can create a lot of value for our shareholder going forward in our own greenfield development projects. And in order to help also the cash on cash and the earlier cash flow contribution, we will be using M&A as a focused tools to help rebalance our portfolio. And Salvador and Montaner are two good examples of what we want to do. And of course, our team is focused to deliver on that strategy. So construction activities is also very important. And as you know, we have a few projects under construction, and the biggest one is Hillcrest. And we have started the construction in the middle of the crisis last January, beginning of February. Very proud again of the team that we have been able to manage and advance the construction almost as planned. So we have perhaps four weeks of delay that we intend to catch up with having a little bit more personnel on the ground. As of today, we have just over 320 workers on site, And the plan is to bring this number to about 400 by the end of the month. And so we're very confident that we'll be able to achieve the COD date by the end of the year again. So pretty proud of what we have been doing over there, given the COVID crisis. And a good surprise, the Inuvik Hydro Project, last time I was talking to you, we were not so optimistic of being able to go in the north of Quebec, given the sensitivity of these village to a potential contamination with COVID-19. But the local government were looking into having some economic activities, and we found a good compromise on security and health and economic development. So construction restart in early July, and so we will be able to meet the COD, the original COD. So happy to report on this as well. Eon 2 wind project is advancing very, very fast. We're hoping to be in COD by the end of the year also. It's a small project, but I would say that it's a first giant step for us in France, because it's the first greenfield project that the team has put together, and it's the first of hopefully many. France is a priority for us. We're growing our team over there in terms of development. We are seeing the European Commission putting a lot of their strategy to restart the economy towards a green economy. So we're quite happy to put a little bit more effort in France, and our pipeline is growing, and hopefully, like I said, Eon is only the first step toward putting more projects out of our greenfield pipeline in France. From another completely different part of the world, we've been very active in Hawaii. Very happy to report that we've been shortlisted on two new projects, a 15 and a 20 megawatt, coupled with batteries for a 60 and a 80 megawatt hour battery. So this is, we now have four projects under development in Hawaii. Pretty happy on that aspect, because as you know, this is a sector that we want to develop, and we want to have more project being developed in this type of approach with storage. And we're also happy to report that we won a project, a 9 megawatt hour battery storage only in France. The project is called Tonnerre. It's interesting in the sense that it's our first investment in storage only. Again, hopefully not the first, but we will be successful in the future developing more of those type of projects, especially with our alliance with Hydro-Québec. As you know, Hydro-Québec has a very good battery, and they want to deploy that battery around the world, and we will be trying to team up with them and be successful in promoting those storage projects around the world. So Tonnerre is the first interesting project. We won some, we won into an RFP, and it will be installed in our Eon facility. So it's just an extension of our existing substation. So pretty exciting about this project, not because it's a big project, but because it's a first of a new segment of business that we want to develop. And perhaps one of the surprise that we came up, and I would tell you that it was not a surprise for us, because we knew about Griffin Trail, but we've been given a very nice gift by the Treasury of the U.S. Government when they extended the tax, the PTC in the U.S. Griffin Trail has had some work done in the past, and we were able to qualify Griffin Trail for 100% PTC. So that came to a very good surprise for us. Remind you that the PTC in the U.S. Are starting to be about 2.5 cents, and it has an escalation, and it's good for 10 years. So although this project will be starting to be merchant, I consider that receiving for a period of at least 10 years a 2.5 cents U.S. Per kilowatt hour produced coming from indirectly the U.S. Treasury is in a form of a PPA. Remind you that in Quebec, in Saskatchewan and Alberta, projects were won in a 3 cents, 3.5 cents per kilowatt hour, and people were happy to receive that. So 2.5 cents U.S. is almost the equivalent, and we have an inflator there. Also, we will be selling electricity in the spot market in ERCOT. Even though we're seeing a weak market these days because of the COVID, the demand in ERCOT has come down by about 5%, which is not offset compared to other markets. Quebec is in that range, and BC Hydro is in that range as well. So no specific really downturn in ERCOT other than it's a full merchant market, so it might react differently than other markets. But just to give you a little bit of an idea why we changed this approach is the fact that, as an example, Ford City, we have signed a PPA for $18 per megawatt hour or 1.8 cents per kilowatt hour. So this is the rate of PPA that we're seeing in ERCOT. And, of course, you don't get to have the potential upside when the market are peaking or even when the future market would be better in ERCOT. It's those PPA are nice, but again, I think that going merchant is giving us quite a bit of an upside, and we still have the option to sign a PPA if a good offer come across our board. So very happy on that aspect in the sense that. It's a project that we're in our pipeline, but we're basically on ice. And having this gift from the U.S. Treasury enable us to unwind this value that was hidden in our pipeline. And the team did a fantastic job because, of course, a lot of people got waked up by this extension of PTC. So we were able to secure the same good team that worked on Ford. We have secured GE and Blattner for the execution of this project, and we're very confident that this project will be in COD by Q3 of 2021. We're finalizing the tax equity term sheet as we speak. So pretty enthusiastic about this project that basically is not unlocking some value that was hidden in our pipeline. Also, I'm finishing with Mountain Air acquisition in Idaho, which we just announced a few weeks ago. So, again, the same idea there is that good quality project that will help rebalance the cash flow of the company. It's not a change of mentality in Energex. We are a long-term investor. But this is our way to mitigate the fact that we are paying a dividend, and we are a growing company, so we have to have a tool to rebalance the distribution of the cash flow, and this is one way to do it, and we're quite happy on this acquisition. And like I said, the M&A team is focused on finding these type of acquisition in the near time. Chile is also quite active. We're seeing some good deal flow, and perhaps we will be able to do some other acquisition like Salvador. So pretty upbeat in the sense that we've been doing a lot of activities, a lot of construction, and a lot of development. Weather was not on our side in this quarter, and BC Hydro was not very friendly to our cause, but of course we are, like I said in the past, fighting back, and we will defend our rights against BC Hydro for these PPA. I'm very confident that we'll succeed in defending our rights under these PPA. But other than that, very proud again on my team, and I thank all the Energix team for this great success in the last few months given the COVID-19 challenge. So on that, I would open the floor.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star followed by the number one on your touch tone phone. You'll hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be pulled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift your handset if you're using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. Your first question comes from David Quezada from Raymond James. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My first question here, just on the curtailment at BC Hydro. I believe when the news first came out, there was a $20 million expected revenue hit, and I think you saw $11 million in the current quarter or in 2Q. Should we expect the balance of that to fall in 3Q, or has something changed there potentially?
No, you're right. It's just the fact that the curtailment was effective until July 20th. So we will see still a 20 days of July being under curtailment.
Yeah, and it's still around 20 million. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then maybe just a question on your U.S. development pipeline. I think last call you mentioned a couple of the solar projects in PJM in Ohio. You said at least 100 megawatts, but you were trying to get more land and potentially increase the size of those. I'm wondering if you have any update there.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't mention it. The team is also quite active there. We're expanding on the land. We're just cautious on starting project for 2021 in the U.S., given the fact that those would benefit from ITC. And ITC is a little bit different than PTC in the sense that you get the benefit, the tax advantage, on the year the project is put in COD. And perhaps some tax equity provider might be a little bit more nervous in 2021, given the fact of the state of the economy. So we're cautious on putting solar in 2021. Hence, we're happy to have now Griffin Trail being developed for 2021, and this is a PTC, so less of a concern in the sense that the tax equity provider have 10 years to take advantage of those tax equity credit. But no, the team is very active. We're also opening up a good development platform in the northwest of the U.S. A lot of these area have developed some aggressive policy towards having more renewable in their portfolio, so we're getting ready also to answer some RFP in that region of the states as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Nelson Ng from RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks. Just my first question relates to Griffin. So in terms of going merchant, like what's your, like, are you also assuming that you're, like, obviously you had to decide whether you want to hedge or go merchant, and you have various kind of return expectations. From your perspective, what is the return premium for merchant versus hedging?
Well, it's very difficult to answer that in the sense that this is driven a lot by future price of electricity, and you could have a few curves. We're quite conservative when we're proposing these projects to our board. We're taking Wood Mackenzie without carbon as a kind of a reference. So this is probably one of the most conservative curves out there. And we're basing our financial decision on that. But I'll give you a little bit of a very, very general and rough numbers. The project will probably be cost around $280 million, roughly. PTC, just the PTC, we're going to get something around $21 to $22 million of PTC as a run rate, and I'm not taking into the inflation in consideration. And of course, we expect to invest something around $116 million, our share of the equity. The rest will be tax equity. We expect to have something around $10 million of distribution from that project in different ways. We're going to have PAYGO. We're going to also have some revenue from the spot price. But I think that we are looking into something around 8 to 10% cash on cash. And for a tax equity deal, this is not bad. And we've seen a lot of other bigger players doing just that and walking away from very cheap PPA that was basically flat or levelized for 10 years, 12 years. At a range of $15 to $18 per megawatt hour. That's what we're seeing now in the market. That's what we're getting from the merchant portion of Phoebe and Ford. And so it's hard to think that the market will be a lot lower than these range, even considering the COVID-19 situation in Texas. So I think that we keep the upside going forward. So even if there were to be some carbon introduced, tax introduced or limitation introduced in the United States, I think that these type of project will see a very good upside. And we'll see also with the U.S. election in November, if the Democrat, if Biden's get in, I think that U.S. Investment will benefit. Green energy will benefit from his election. And if Trump stays in there, it cannot be worse than what we have seen in the last 4 years. So we're still very positive about our investment in U.S.
Okay, that's good color. And then in terms of raising tax equity, does tax equity typically require hedges for projects, or do you think they've become more comfortable with unhedged?
Well, they were requiring it, and I think that given the fact that we have now delivered good project in time and in budget, that was helping also. So we have some good relationship with some few tax equity provider that we have leveraging now, and that are accepting the fact that Innergex can do that type of project. So I think it's a great I would say outcome, because 2 years ago we would not have been able to develop a project in this way. And hence Ford City, we had to accept a PPA of about $18 flat for 12 years. So we were happy to have it at the time because it unlocked the tax equity. But I think that the Griffin Trail proposal is a better economic proposal for us going forward.
Okay. And then just moving over to Mountain Air, you guys mentioned that you only bought the one class of, I think, the Class B shares, the equity rather than the tax equity. Given that the project is about 8 or 8.5 years old, when's the expected flip date for tax equity?
It has already happened. The flip. So now it's a straight partnership where MetLife gets a third of the cash flow, and we get to have 68% of the cash flow. We may have some discussion in the future to acquire the remaining portion of that the project. It's But it'll be a negotiation with MetLife. They don't have to sell. We don't have to buy. But if we can find the sweet spot between the two of us, we might execute on that as well.
Okay, got it. So MetLife has already taken up most of the tax attributes has already been realized for that project,
yes.
Is what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay, and then one last question before I get back in the queue. In terms of the French energy storage or battery project,
yes.
So you get a contract for differences for 7 years. So should we think of it as your EBITDA is going to be essentially fixed for 7 years, and then it'll be, I guess, somewhat merchant thereafter? And what should we think about how the merchant, the cash flows are after 7 years? Like, if today's market remains unchanged for 7 years, like how do the cash flows look after that 7 year contract?
Well, that's a little bit far. Well, it all depends on how the market and the penetration of green energy and how the nuclear would have fade away. So it's a little bit hard to answer, but the guys that have put forward all those assumptions, like I said, we tend to be conservative on those assumptions, and if we unlock value in the future, we're happier. I don't have the specific number at year 11 for Tonnerre. Maybe Jean-François can give
follow
you an
up
update, follow up on that. I don't have the exact number.
Sure thing. That's good for now. Thanks, Michelle.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from Sean Stewart from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. Couple questions. With respect to the BC curtailments, can you give us an update on the arbitration process and expected timing of any resolution with BC Hydro on that front?
We're not allowed to talk about arbitration with according to our contract, but of course we can say that we're in the dispute, and a dispute is it's going to take 4 months, 5 months, maybe perhaps 6 months to see the end of this process. Certainly less than a year. But anywhere between 4 to 8 months, I would guess.
Okay. And follow-up question on Griffin Trail. Can you give us some context on the interconnection for that project? And we know that in North Texas there's been some congestion issues. Any details you can give on that project specifically?
Well, that project is just a few miles south of Forest City. So in Forest City, we haven't seen too much problem with congestion. ERCOT is always a funny place because, you know, it changed quite a bit. But that region has not been hurt that much, actually. The place that we're quite bad is the northwest, the Pennell, as we all know. But Ford, we had the experience of last year, and it was not bad. You know, I think it was, and hence we're fairly positive about this location. It's the wind is not as attractive as the northwest. But we know the regime of the wind there because we had study Ford, and we had some metmast in Griffin Trail. It's, like I said, it's literally about not even 100K south of Ford. I can't remember exactly, but I think it's 40-50 K south of Ford. So we know the area pretty well, and now we're slightly positive about those congestion in that area.
Okay, that's all I have. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Mark Jarvie from CIBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. In the past, you guys have talked a little bit about maybe changing your exposure to Texas over time, selling down minority interests. With another project in Griffin Trail, any updated views on that? And and how you guys think about potentially optimizing your exposure in Texas, and does the congestion issues or issues with the basis hedge limit you from doing anything in the near term?
Well, it's a very good question. I definitely want to go and diversify in the U.S. It just happened that we were well positioned in Texas, and Griffin Trail was just a very nice gift that we received from the U.S. Treasury. You know, it's hard to walk away from a 100% PTC. Like I said, it's 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour for 10 years with inflator. So this will pay 70 to 75% of the project in the next 10 years. I think that we will be looking to perhaps sell down a portion of the portfolio in ERCOT. Is today a bit the best timing to sell it? Probably not. One way also to diminish our exposure to ERCOT is to grow the rest of the business, and that's what we are intending to do. And we will be opportunistic to basically divest if we find a good price for our equity, given the fact that perhaps ERCOT has been seen as a weak market given the recent weakness in the spot market price. But it's a place where there's a lot of growth, and I think that having good assets that are fully amortized and be subsidized by the Treasury, U.S. Treasury, is not bad to have on a portfolio basis either.
Okay, that makes sense. And then on slide 15, when you guys talk about more of a normalized payout ratio, there's a line about market softening assumptions. Can you maybe just outline what that entails and what you guys are expecting over the next 12 months there?
Sure. I think it's a little bit of a cautious in our number, making sure that we don't want to disappoint you guys. We have some exposure in Texas and to some degree in Chile. So given the COVID-19 uncertainty, we have put this type of a buffer. We don't know exactly what it is. It's just we did put a little bit of a buffer in our calculation.
Yeah, but you're right, Michel. It's mostly, Mark, related to our exposure in ERCOT, I would say, for most of it. And we have seen that in the results, with the average price in Texas being a bit softer than a year ago, and probably with the lower demand there. So that's exactly the reason for being conservative here.
And does that capture then any expected losses on the basis hedge, or
that? Well, on that side, I mean, the basis and all the basis unfavorable variance we used to have slowed down over the last. So the nodal price have decreased, but the volatility on the basis have reduced as well. So on that flip side, it has been positive. Like the basis hedge with Phoebe has even created some value during the quarter. So we were happy about that. So we lose on the average nodal selling price day to day because of reduced demand. But in terms of volatility on the basis risk, it has been reduced, fortunately. And the congestion may have an impact as well on that, Mark.
Okay, that's very helpful color. And my last question is just now with Mountain Air done and Salvador Solar, what sort of the expectations here on the pace of further M&A and capacity for further acquisitions, given where you guys are with your liquidity?
We, like I said, it's a tool. The more development we're going to do, we have to balance it with good acquisition like Montaner and Salvador. And the team is focused in finding some good opportunity there. There is a lot of volume of deal. It's just that we have to find the one that fits us and have a good return. And part of the equation is also a big portion of the quality of a deal. So the team is there. We have some friends out there that know what we're looking for. So we're very confident that we'll be able to match our development with those type of acquisitions down the road.
So if you think about what you're doing on the development side and Hillcrest is the next project, which really is 2021, do you still feel a desire to rebalance the current mix, or would you feel it's more like, again, compensating for maybe a little less cash flow from Hillcrest next year, given the tax equity contribution?
Well, we like the fact that, you know, if you look at Salvador and Montaner, if we can do one of those every year, that helps. You know, that's roughly the equilibrium that we're looking for. So it's not like we're going to go out and be nuts about M&A, but the type of activities that you've seen in Montaner and Salvador, if we can replicate that every year, and if we can come up with 200-300 megawatt of new pipeline project coming from our own pipeline, like Hillcrest is 200 megawatt and Griffin Trail will be 225 megawatt. So just next year, we'll be putting over 400 megawatt of new project in coming from our own construction activities. So this is a ratio that we wanna keep, and this is in line with the 10% growth of our EBITDA that we have given you as guidance.
Okay, that's good call, Michelle. And maybe last question, Jeff. How much remaining CapEx at Hillcrest through the year?
Remaining CapEx at Hillcrest, let me get this, or maybe I call you after the call. So,
sure.
So let me follow up on that precise question after the call, but it's looking right now. So.
And the first tax equity disbursement is scheduled to be mid-September, and that date is still on
construction. On time, yeah. Construction here at the table. So I'll get to you after the call. So
okay. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
and guys, I'm very sorry. I have a hard stop because I'm on another board, and unfortunately, the timing of the it has been a little bit of overlap. So I would take another question, and then Jean-François will stay in to answer the question.
Your next question comes from Rupert Mayer from National Bank. Your line is open.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Hey, Rupert.
So we haven't talked about France, I don't believe. You had some shutdowns there in the quarter. Can you give us some color on what happened and is that ongoing?
Yeah. We had on Montjean and Rabier two events where a blade failed, and those are Vestas. The first time we were able to come back in work and restart with the local government. In France, the equivalent of the health and safety department is very, very, I would say, peculiar. They're on every incident like that. And so the first time it was not so bad, but the second time, only a few months after, then they took that very, very seriously. So it's not that it was a big deal to replace a blade. We, you know, we have blade that over our fleet that breaks now and then. But the problem is that the French government are shutting down the old part that have the same blades or the same type of machine. And this is why it did hurt. We have insurance coverage for that, but we are in discussion, intense discussion with Vestas to find the problem with these blades. What we understand, it's one of the first batch of a new design that were introduced for their blades. And they don't necessarily have found a big problem with them, but you know, this is the issue: is that the local government in France wants to have answer and find the cause of the break. And now we have reintroduced the production in those two sites, but with some kind of a protocol where we want to minimize the exposure to certain level of power to those blades. So we're working very closely with Vestas, but obviously it's a priority of the operating team to find the long-term solution for these blades in France.
Okay, thank you. And on Phoebe, you had some curtailment there. You've talked a little about Texas and congestion already, but can you give us some color on how much curtailment you saw here and maybe what the outlook is for Phoebe going forward? Will there be any reduction in curtailment?
We were a little bit surprised to see these economical curtailment in Phoebe. It did account for almost 6% of the production, Rupert. We were surprised to see that for the time being, that did happen in only a few months. Those occurrences happened in a few months. So sometimes it's due of outage on the system as well when they are working on the distribution and transportation system. So lately we haven't seen any curtailment, economic curtailment in Phoebe. Hopefully that is behind us, but it was almost 6%.
All right, that's very good. I'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, very sorry, guys. I hate to do this, but I have to leave, so I'll have Jean-François answer the rest of the question. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Ben Fan from BMO. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to ask you, and I think thanks for the numbers on Griffin. I guess like when you did the quick math there, it's over $40 million EBITDA, so that's probably be about 5% of your EBITDA pro forma. So is your merchant appetite now more moving to under 10% now versus under 5%? Is that direction where you are comfortable with going?
Yes, I mean, you mean around, you're speaking IRR, Ben? Sorry, I missed the question.
Oh, I was thinking more about, you've always, I'm thinking more about commodity exposure. Like, you've always been almost like 0% commodity exposure. You've slowly gone to 5%.
Yes, but you're speaking about... you're speaking about the total mix. So,
yeah,
like Michel said,
it's what you're comfortable with now. Like, it seems like it keeps going up over time.
Yeah, like Michel said, of course, going merchant with Griffin is a portion of the Griffin will get us more exposed to merchant revenue, definitively. But also, as Michel mentioned, when you look at our contracted book of business on a revenue proportionate basis, when you have to consider the PTCs as being contracted with the treasury. So it's kind of an informed shape. We'll get to a measurement of our contracted portion of the business with including also the proportion of the PTCs, which is in form of a secure contract with government with escalation. So, but you're right. Nevertheless, I mean, the nodal sale at Griffin will be merchant, so we wrap our mind around that and we're comfortable with that. So that will have an overall impact on our exposure globally to a more merchant market. Yes, you're right.
Okay. So really, like, if Griffin is 8-10%, project, then does that mean like these other projects you have, Fjord and Phoebe, that they're actually, it looks like it's more 5-6% project near term?
Yes, so Phoebe, obviously, as we mentioned, recently the market have soft softer a bit in Texas, so we have seen pressure on the average selling price year over year. That's probably in relation with the COVID and the lower demand we see there. So we have seen a pressure down on our cash-on-cash return for sure on those projects. So we hope it's temporarily. And on the other side, we have seen some less volatility on our business. So we're happy about that. So it has compensated a bit. So.
Okay. Can I ask you, lastly, I mean, it sounds like 8 to 10% is the sweet spot for you, and whether it's merchant or contracted, that there's some upside in year 11 once tax equity comes off, although you are taking more merchant risk in year 11 at that point, so you got to make a call on that. But is it hard to get 8 to 10% outside of Texas or America in general? I mean, is that why you're so enthusiastic, or maybe moving more of your capital to Texas and maybe some other regions?
So that's a good point. So like Michel mentioned, we have a view on maybe eventually recycling some of our capital there. So that would kick in a few percent of a return in addition to the 8 to 10%. So that's a nice way to get a better return. That's definitive. But you're right. But those projects at 8 to 10% are less risky to develop, more faster. So that's the sweet spot we have seen so far. But we're happy to develop in Texas. It's a region that is growing, so it's less risky, much easier to develop. Griffin Trail started from scratch, and in a quarter we're almost at construction status. So it's less risk, so return are a bit lower. I mean, it's typical in any business.
Okay, right. That's great. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Nelson Ng from RBC Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Great, thanks. I just have a quick follow-up question. Just on the Eon Wind project, not sure whether I'm reading it right, but I think... like, are you financing roughly 100% of the project with non-recourse amortizing debt? I think the project cost is about 11 million euros, and you raised about 11 million euros as well.
A small addition to our actual project, so that's not probably representative of what we could do in the future, but that's because it's an addition to our project. Not to be representative in the future.
Okay, got it. And then just a quick follow-up on Ben's question. In terms of expected returns, I think Michelle mentioned in the past that you guys are generally looking at like a 6 to 8% premium over the 10-year risk-free rate. Should we assume that Salvador is at the higher end of that rate, given some of its merchant exposure? And Mountain Air, I presume, is on the lower end of that range, given that it's fully contracted and in the U.S. Is it?
That's a good point. Valid observation. So I would say you're pretty much right, Nelson.
Okay, great. Okay, that's all for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nelson.
Your next question comes from Naji Baydoun from Industrial Alliance. Your line is open.
Hi. Good morning. Some of my questions have been answered, but just maybe two quick follow-ups. I guess, you know, follow-up on Ben's questions. Just maybe if you can expand more your thoughts on overall merchant exposure. When you think about new projects that you're developing or acquiring, be it solar or wind, going forward, what do you think is the right mix of merchant assets like Griffin Trail or Salvador versus maybe contracted assets? Like how much merchant exposure, I guess, are you comfortable taking on from a portfolio perspective?
Well, I don't want to comment on any long-term targets here. We have decided to move Griffin Trail in that fashion because of the knowledge we have gained over the past few years on the Texas market. And as Michel mentioned, we're pretty confident using the WoodMac no carbon curve that we are conservative. So And that Griffin trade project will not change that much our overall mixed exposure to merchant. So it's too early, but of course, Chilean market and the ERCOT market makes you have a greater exposure on merchant. So, but commenting further down, it would be not be reasonable for me to comment too long away in our average threshold here. So,
okay, okay. I understand. Maybe just one more question. Can you give us more of more details or an update on some of your wind development activities in France? Are there any opportunities, maybe some of the ones that you're co-developing with Vandes that might be getting ready to be bid into the onshore wind auctions in that country?
Well, we're happy with the team there in Lyon and the progress they have made. So all of our portfolio of projects, we have over 120 megawatts around of project. I would remind you that projects in France are smaller, around 20 megawatts, something like that. So every quarter we're progressing on that. So we're confident to, so Lyon is our first greenfield project, very happy with it. So we're confident to see the light on a few of those prospective initiatives in France. The team are doing good. And the team also started to reflect on maybe some solar opportunity as well. So that's another nice initiative from the team there. So we're happy. So I just want to remain conservative and with my forecast here.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mrs. Vacheron, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, and thank you, everyone. We look forward to speaking to you at our next results conference call in November. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may now disconnect your lines.